show's over. Turn it back around. Probably something more interesting over that way.
But Arbiter friend?
Thank you. Oh, it's still warm.
Thank you, sir. May I have another? Not!
I'm sorry. Did you mean to suck?
But Arbiter friend! This crap!
Arbiter, you are my hero.
Chief, you may be the dumbest best man I've ever met.
You had me the hero, huh? Well, now you're dead. Now you're a dead hero. And you're actually forgotten. I can't even remember your name.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Halo Lorecast. It's been a minute. Yes, it's been an entire week since we talked about the last part of the Broken Circle. And I said that this would be the finale, and it is the finale. I actually just got done reading part of it because I broke it up into 3 days and kind of read all of them there on the cuff. So before we even get started, a little bit of house cleaning. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Halo_Lorecast. This is also a part of Repeat Studios podcast. We also have an MCU and DCEU podcast called MCU on Repeat and DCEU on Repeat. That'll be below in the description where I do stuff with my buddy Blaine. Also, we have a Patreon. It's $6 a month for several different podcasts. One that I'm doing called Everywhere All at Once, which is basically what it sounds like. And another I'm doing with one of our producers, Chad, called D-Pads and D-Bags, where we talk about video games. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So I recommend you check that out. Again, it's $6 a month. And, you know, also in our link tree on our Twitter, we have some Fret shirts from Halo Infinite. I know you all love Fret, or at least you should love Fret. We should all have a friend like Fret in our lives. So with that being said, I think we should just get right into this. This might be short, sweet, and to the point, but I really, really enjoyed the final ending here of this part one for Broken Circle. It really kind of picked up steam after a while. This book is fascinating because when this book started off, it was such a slog. I mean, like Forerunner Saga slog. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. I've said this before. I think that the slog in Halo is very different than the slog in a lot of other books. It's this slow kind of burn of world building, getting into things we don't know, and it's knowledge that is greatly expanding. And if you're more or less a casual Halo fan, you might not care about those specific things. But this is like one of the things where it's like, I enjoy learning things that I haven't learned before and seeing different scenarios play out like the author specifically intended with these different characters. So, you know, part one, part two, part three, there was some, at least part one was a huge pacing issue. The prologue and chapter one, incredibly long, too long if you ask me. And from there, basically to the end of chapter 14, the end of part one of the actual book, it's been a nonstop back and forth fest of these are kind of the comparisons between the Covenant and the Usins. This is what betrayal kind of looks like in different affirmations of their society. This is kind of like, you know, even though the Usins are really, really cool and like they're being rebels, they're also pieces of shit who reinforce their own patriarchy. And not only that, they misgender Mendicant bias quite a bit. If that's something you care about, I cared about it a great deal. I was like, why are you doing this? So, you know, even though they're rebelling for freedom, they're still kind of, you know, assholes in their own little right. In a lot of different ways, no better than the Covenant. And I think that's such an interesting thing. And there's even some parallels between McKinn and Usa here where it feels like specifically that McKinn might be more honorable than Usa. And just because Usa gives them a little bit more mercy doesn't mean mercy's the deciding factor or the end all be all for leaders. It just means that maybe there's some slips in the cracks. Maybe Usa's not seeing the entire picture as clearly. And I'm not promoting the Covenant. I don't like the Covenant. I think religion in general, at least in my own bias and opinions, religion is a cult full of Insecurities and ignorance. And, you know, that's kind of what the Covenant is here. So it's pretty historically accurate. But we left off with us getting the Luminary, with McKen getting the Luminary, and he needed to track down the remaining females who wanted to come with them. Otherwise, the Covenant might be a little bit sketched. They're like, we don't know about this guy. He's coming back with a couple less people. And on top of that, he doesn't have the females. He goes and gets the females, who are sickly disgusted by McKen and his presence. Apparently, the Sanshion on Jean-Jacques are a lot more attractive than this frail penis of a man called McKen. And it gets to a point where they're heading back to the ship, and here come the Stoics to attack. And they are dragging the Sangheili soldier that betrayed them and ran away into the forest, like, basically, like, on horseback, but they're dragging him. And the creatures they're riding is basically vegetation from the forest. And they rip this Sangheili to shreds as a point of intimidation. And there's a bloodbath going on, and McKen's just trying to survive, get the females back, and have the Luminary stay intact. And that happens, but barely. Barely. It's actually Sanshion, one of the females, actually defeats them by using one of the beasts on the planet, who they didn't necessarily tame, but they've grown up with and kind of taken care of. So there's like a mutual respect. The creature also dies. But they get into the ship and they take off, and they're basically hit by a rocket, which means they're flying off. The system is depressurizing. So McKen puts on a depressurization suit so he can make sure the Luminary's okay. And it's not okay. Not only does that flip bitch fly back into space, down back to Jean-Jacques, one of the females dies because she was in the room when it depressurized, which sucks. It's just, that's like one of the ways I wouldn't want to go out. I understand that it'd be, I think, incredibly fast. You know, you just basically explode, but at the same time, you know, imagine telling your loved ones, I died via explosion due to pressure. That's kind of morbid. And then on the opposite side, on Refuge, we have Krolin and Drem, of course, who are pieces of shit. They're just pieces of shit. So you have Tursa, and you have Lunar, and they're basically on top of a water fountain, basically admiring each other's bodies. You know, two aliens, they really want to do things to each other. They have this consensual respect, and not only respect, but somewhat horniness for each other, like we've seen from other forms of media. And they hear some voices crackling. They look down, and it's Krolin and Drem talking to some other individuals that are related to Tursa, talking about getting rid of Usa, getting revolting, and them leading to their deaths. And the shitty thing is that they look up and see Tursa, who almost falls. And they manage to escape the situation, in which a cool thing, Lunar kind of knocks out Krolin, in a way to get them out of it, which was one of those moments that Tursa was like, yeah, she's totally a dom. And they escape, only to be brought to Usa Zealous and Arnica Scarmaker, because he's like, I've heard that you want to commit acts of sedition and treason. And they're like, this isn't true at all. Actually, I've been trying to find, like, the right time to tell you, because they said they'd blackmail me. And he's like, oh, this is true. Interesting. So he brings Krolin and Drem, and they keep referring to the flying voice, the machine. And here comes During bias, and he comes swooping in, and he's like, actually, we have recording like software everywhere, obviously, so we can hear every single conversation they had, and we can see it. So they see them threatening Tursa, and not only that, they also hear like the seditious acts they were talking about committing. And that's when Usa decides, he's like, all right, y'all gonna die. So basically what happens is he's like, we're gonna put them up for execution. And Drim comes forward and he's like, no, this isn't gonna happen. And Ernica basically stabs him and makes some ungodly noises that even disturbed Usa. So Ernica just cut off his head to get it to stop. And Krolin was like, okay, we're just not going to fight. I'm going to go into the chamber. And basically what happens is he gets into a prisoner cell and he basically mocks the other Sangheili there, stabs him in the ear, and the dude opens the cage to try to kill him. And that's when Krolin escapes. And not only does Krolin escape, he escapes and tells the Covenant exactly what happens. And so there's this interesting bit where the pacing is going back and forth. He's trying to plead his case to the Prophet of Inner Conviction, McKinn, and they're around the Shield World. It was like an immediate jump, and that's why I said this isn't going to be very long, because it went from, okay, he escaped, oh, they're there. So just a weird pacing thing. Like, I was like, oh, wow, so we're already here. That's, you know, you could have just cut back on like the first chapter and we would be here, you know, sooner, but it also wouldn't be immediate, if you understand what I'm saying. And he's like, okay, we'll just take your information and you're gonna go be a prisoner for a while and we're gonna throw you in the first wave or something. And McKinn calls Usa Solo and basically pleads with him. He says, listen, if you surrender, I will use everything in my power to save your people, get them back to St. Helios. But you and your wife must go for trial and probably be executed. And there's some circling here where McKinn is like, listen, I respect you. We met on the planet of Red and Blue. You have mercy. You are a good person, and a good leader. I'm just trying to save your people. And that's when it kind of gets out of hand, because they can't negotiate, period, at all. There's no negotiation. And Usa says, if y'all don't back up, I'm going to destroy this world and all the Forerunner artifacts that are in here, and y'all are going to be fucked, and that's it. And he's like, well, I don't want to do that. Like, let's chill out real fast. Like, we want the Forerunner artifacts, but we still want justice at the same time. And Usa's like, fine, we'll give you some Forerunner artifacts a little at a time per year, and then every cycle you'll come back for more, spare our lives, and you just leave. And he's like, well, they're not going to agree to that either. That's kind of a far-fetched idea. And Usa pretty much says, then there is no pleasing you. And that's when they try to launch their first attack on the first point, and their men are slaughtered. And among those is Krolin, who gets torn to shreds and cut into tiny pieces. And Usa basically does a hologram to McKinn real fast and says, I have anticipated your attack. I understand that we cannot win, but if you do not back off, we will blow the world up. And that's exactly what happens. They blow the entire world up to where gas and the entire thing absolutely combusts and sends propels a bunch of the metal from the Shield World towards them, and they have to evacuate. And McKinn's basically put in this situation where, like, okay, Usa Zealous is dead, but that's crazy. I don't have any proof, and he's insane. Did he really just destroy all those artifacts? And not only that, he killed all of his people too. I don't have anything, but I guess I have to go back to the council and report it. Like, that's kind of, I guess he's dead. You know, he's really befuddled by it because he thinks he's so human at a point, but nobody could have survived the explosion. And then you see them basically in this container that basically saved them from the explosion. More like half the planet's gone, more so. And because of that, you know, they're already talking about rebuilding and, you know, what would it take to rebuild. And they make a comment about the like the box or shield they're in, and Enduring Bias says something about the flood. He's like, yeah, we needed a place to hide just in case the flood. And they're like, what are you talking about, the flood? And he's like, I actually have no idea what I'm talking about. And it seems like Enduring Bias is becoming a little bit more aware of his mortality, to where it's like, I'll continue to help you, but like, you know, things aren't going well for me. I've been alive for a long, long time. And that's kind of where part one leaves off, which is insane. There's There's not a lot that happens in like five chapters, guys. And I'm trying to do my best to summarize all that, which I am. And, you know, I really enjoyed the first half of this book. Like I said, it had some pacing issues. There was a lot of, well, this. And then it finally got to the flow of characters, you know, and I'm still not sold on Usa Zealous. Like, there hasn't been enough development there. I like Tirsa more than Usa, and I think that's where it's going anyway. And I like McKen a whole lot more than Usa, even though he's part of the Covenant, which is a weird thing. He's a more realized character. So I'm going to be interested to see how this develops, really, into part two later on, which will be later on, because we're talking about 2552. The next book, if I'm not mistaken, is Contact Harvest, which I'm super excited to dive into Joseph Staton's, like, super beautiful book. I love that book. But, like, this set up everything so well, and it's interesting in such a particular manner. And, like, McKen, in realization, he's failed, but at the same time, he's still alive. Also to note, when he got back with the Luminary, I should have mentioned this before, they basically put McKen on blast, and they're like, yeah, you're like a piece of shit. I don't even think you had the Luminary. And here come Corlum, and he's like, how fucking dare you guys? I'm a retired prophet. Arno betrayed this man, and he should be basically put in the dumpster and dead, and if not, he should be promoted or demoted all the way to sewage level. And because Corlum stood up for him and used his higher esteem powers, if you will, he was able to basically get McKen's head to stay on his shoulders, and they immediately transferred him to this. He's like, hey, we got a guy who's Sangheili. He says he knows where Usa Zealous is. And that's kind of the whole finale of this part. Again, it's really good. It's not as much action, a lot of dialogue. The last part was a lot of character-driven stuff where you can see the juxtaposition between the characters. But I do recommend this book if you're into, like, super heavy action. This book ain't it. It's not it. But if you love, like, Halo and the lore that goes with it and the world building, I think you'd be particularly surprised by this thing, especially considering John Shirley hasn't written another Halo book. So, also, on that note, we got an announcement the other day. If some of you are not on Twitter, which I assume most of you are not because none of you follow me, it was announced by Kelly Gray, if you don't know her. She wrote Rubicon Protocol and Haruspis. I know you know who Haruspis is, right? Works for 343 now. They announced that there will be a new book about the Didact called Didact Epitaph. And this is post-Halo 4 Didact. He is somehow alive, and we're getting more stuff on him. That is thoroughly exciting. I am thoroughly pumped for all of that stuff. I know there's been a lot of stuff where people are like, I love the Didact, but they killed him too soon. Well, guess what? He's back, and he's back in big fashion, because I've heard nothing but great things about the Rubicon Protocol and Haruspis working with Kelly Gray, which is insane. About, you know, the lore and the direction to go with the Didact. I personally can't believe it, and I'm super excited about it. So with that being said, again, you can follow me at Halo_Lorecast. Please follow me. I will have whatever the next episode is in the description below. There's a lot of audio logs and stuff before that attach to technically video games, but we're going to wait for the video games for those specifically. I don't want to just have an episode where I talk about the transcripts from the audio logs. That's kind of weird. So we're going to hold off on those. And I think the next thing that we're doing is Contact Harvest Part 1. So stay tuned, Spartans.